Welcome to episode 102 of Valbase Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English language Valbase Stuttgart fan podcast where we use unofficial, uninformed, usually unprepared. We are your hosts. My name is Travis. You can reach me at Hazelfish. He is Ted. You can reach him at Teddy Valbe. Ted, we did this last episode. This is why I kicked Matt off, because he's been on so long that we don't have numbers that make sense anymore. But for you, it's episode number 10, double digits. So congratulations on joining in an elite crew, Austin, Jeff, myself, and Matt. But the bigger thing here is you've got a couple tens to choose from. So you got Wu Yang currently, Tiago Tomas, you know, old friend to Tiago, Daniel Didavi, who is very maligned and controversial in the fan support, Alex Maxey, who, much like Didavi, people didn't know what to think about him, and Freddie Bobic, who is before our time, I think, but I'll throw him out there too. Of those number 10s, which one gets your heart thumping?
Freddie Bobic gets my heart pumping. I would have liked to have been able to see him on the pitch more than just highlights. I'm going with him. And it's going to get progressively harder for us to find our corresponding beers as I go on more episodes, right? I don't have a 10% beer tonight, and I'm paralyzed with fear.
All right, so we got part one. We got some shout outs. Kevin Hatchard had 8 out of the 25 for Valbe Bingo. Pod predictions. Jeff won this week. He went 4-5, so he broke Austin's streak. Everyone else went 3-6, so a bit of a tough row there. Former Valbeer. So here we go, Ted. Gil played 55 minutes in a 2-1 loss versus Aston Villa in the Conference League. Juan got one whole minute in a 2-2 draw versus rivals KSC. Poor Luca Pfeiffer didn't get anything, but he played 25 minutes in a loss to Cologne. Mo Sanko, who had the hat trick last time, played 83 minutes in a loss to Rotterdam. Omar Baez played 75 minutes in a draw. I'm not including former players that really are no longer linked to the club, like Wataru Endo, who have scored the equalizer in Liverpool today. You know, of all the names I put out there, any of those, you know, like I said, with number 10, kind of get you reminiscing?
Way to go, Juan. And you know, you're still proving his Stuttgart, VfB Stuttgart credentials, you know, going back to his youth, with his uncle in Stuttgart and all of that stuff, you know, even 1 minute, whatever, sticking it to KSA. Way to go, buddy.
The OFC fantasy, we've got Oak Army won it this week. But Village Footy is still in the lead, so it's pretty close there. In Tippspiel, I Am Rob Holloway won his second of the year and is in third behind Stefan and Kai Guy. It's very tight in that one. The OFC watch parties, I kind of want to talk about this for a little bit. We had over 13 people in Cleveland, maybe 17 or 18, as I'll talk about here in a second. Doug had almost 9 or 10 in Youngstown, and then it was awesome because Peter got Valpy Omaha, which is actually the oldest standing OFC in the United States. He had 6 or 7 in Omaha there. So huge thanks to Der Braumeister in Cleveland, Barkenbeer in Omaha, and Casual Pint in Youngstown. It was just awesome. We had 13 in Cleveland, but we actually had 18. It was really wild, Ted, because we were in the room having our beers and our brats and enjoying the game. What a game it was, you know, to have for a watch party. And in the next room was a family of 5 who had just gotten back from military service in Stuttgart. And they kept seeing us walk out of the room to go to the restroom. And they're like, wait a minute, I recognize that hoop. And so finally we talked to them a little bit, and it was just so serendipitous that they're like, yeah, it's the first time we've ever been to this restaurant. We're like, well, this is the first time we've ever had this watch party. It's the first time back in the States, first time. So I'm going to count them in it, you know, 18. Let's go with that. But it was just awesome that we had that many watch parties over the course of the weekend. I know people keep asking you, Ted, when are you going to get something going on down in Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky? But it was just awesome to get all these people together. And hopefully you can find some like-minded folk and get it going, because it was just a blast to hang out, watch the game, share some good experiences. And the fact that it happened over multiple time zones, that was pretty sweet this weekend.
I'm thinking I'm going to find some unlike-minded folks and go meet up with the Bayern fan group in Cincinnati for the match on the 17th. In particular, because I'm feeling pretty okay about that match, surprisingly.
It's funny. I am going to get into this later in the episode, but we are on cloud nine, brimming with confidence. And part of that has to do with the guys we have on the pitch. So let's dive into the man of the match. It was actually a tie. Who do you think it was who won this first time we've had a tie here? Who was your man of the match for the Bremen game?
Oh, God. Oh, man. I honestly didn't give this too much thought, which is a shame on me. And part of that, I think, is because there was a lot of parity on the pitch. We had a lot of guys play pretty well. In terms of anyone who really stuck out ahead of the rest to me, that's tough. I guess I would go... Oh, man. I'm going Dennis?
You're not wrong. So we had, even though there were two people that were tied, each of them got 31% of the vote. There were four or five other people. Ada was up there. Anton was up there. Dan Axel was up there. Zuber. I don't know why I mentioned Zuber two episodes in a row. But Nubel was up there. But it was Dennis. Like, you nailed it. And it was Silas, which is, I think, a little bit of a surprising one. But you could argue he had a huge impact on that game, causing all kinds of mess on that one side of the pitch there. So, yeah, so we had our first ever OFC man of the match tie between Dennis, very deserving, and Silas. So, Ted, why don't we do that? Why don't we dive right into the match? What do you think?
Let's rock.
All right, so here's what we got. So we are now 39 wins to 36 losses all time against Bremen. This is the origin team for me. And I kind of want to ask you, it was the first game I ever watched where I got in touch with the other folks that would eventually form the OFC, our podcast, all that stuff. Matt reached out to me on Reddit. And I remember watching this match in a local Cleveland bar because it was a Monday match. Back then, if you remember, they were experimenting with that. And so we played on a Monday at Bremen, and we got just our doors blown off, like 5-2 or 6-2, something like that. But it's the origin match for me. Do you remember, I mean, going all the way back, is there a match that you remember either as your first match or just one that you're like, oh, okay, that's what did it for me?
Man, that is a great question. And oddly enough, I actually don't. And I think that more than anything, it might just speak to how difficult it used to be as an American to watch the Bundesliga. So, you know, when I got back to the States from my study abroad period where I fell in love with VfB, it was playing FIFA and always playing with them. I guess if anything, I would say the Champions League matches where we got drawn in a group against Barcelona. I want to say maybe like 2009, 2010, something like that. And those definitely stuck out for me. Those were awesome.
Yeah, yours sound way better than mine and Matt's. A 6-2 loss at Bremen, of all places. So I think
we didn't win. I didn't say we won.
It definitely is a better story, though. But as we talk about the Bremen match, all of us were confident about this one. The whole podcast team predicted Stuttgart would win this one. You and I talked last week. We predicted, I think, 3 goals for Stuttgart. It was just a question of if we'd give up 0 or we'd give up 1. The spread was a goal and a half in this one, which in soccer is pretty big. We were in third place. They were in 12th place. We were coming off a convincing win against Frankfurt. They were coming off a loss to Bayer Leverkusen, but everybody loses to Bayer Leverkusen. Did any of your thoughts change going into the match, or were you pretty confident going into Saturday?
No, I was pretty confident and honestly like felt pretty certain that we would win, which feels insane to say given that we're VfB fans, but we've just been in such good form, and we all knew that we had arguably the most dangerous striker in the league that was going to be returning to the starting 11 after an absence, and Bremen, and like no disrespect to them, because I think you know, they are performing at or maybe even slightly over expectations, but they've just have had a rough go of it of late.
Yeah, and the thing that The only thing that made me a little cautious was Ito was out and Stiller was out, and we heard that Neuvel was sick during the week. And so we didn't have this information last week when we recorded, but Ito's going to be out until January. He has a muscle issue, which I think is, you know, a torn muscle in a thigh hamstring area. Stiller had a bit of a muscular issue after the Frankfurt match. So that was the only thing that gave me cause for concern. The thing that was actually kind of weird for me, Ted, was I'm so comfortable with us doing a 4-2-3-1 with Seiru up top and Ada and Angelo kind of running things in front of the defense. I was a little excited but worried to have Dennis and Seiru in there at the same time because I have bad memories of a 4-4-2 with Bruno. And I just didn't know how that was going to work out with them in there at the same time and without Ito on the left side. So I was optimistic, but I was a little concerned because I'm like, huh, we all want this to happen, but I don't know how these two are actually going to look playing 70, 80 minutes together.
Yeah, agree. What gave me a bit of confidence was and forgive me, listeners, because I don't remember what match this was, but it was earlier in the season when Undav came on as a sub in a match where I think our opponent had come back and tied the match, and it was just like it seemed like it was a slog, and then Honus brought Undav on, and suddenly Seiru, it was like it unlocked everything. Seiru was like holding up play, you know, receiving balls over the top, and he would just take it, bounce it off to Undav, and finally I think Dennis got the winner in that match, and so that gave me confidence they play very well together.
Yeah, it was funny to watch because, and we'll talk about this here, actually in our next segment right now, is I kind of broke the match down into four major talking points. And the first one is domination. And it's just watching it live, and then I watched it again later. It was one-way traffic. It was just clear domination. I don't have the stats in front of me, but it wasn't until the 80th minute where I think Alex Neuvel had to do anything at all. It's just Bremen was toothless. And I don't think they're toothless like maybe a Darmstadt team might be. Our defense was just Daxo and Anton were clearing everything out. But then Silas and Seiru and Dennis, even Stenzel, were just controlling everything up top. And it was just like they were intercepting passes. They were blocking any potential shots or passes. The thing that got me is just we had chances galore. We didn't get them all in. But even the announcer said how Bremen's only hope is to wait till about the 75th minute, put on some offensive players, and hope for the best. They can keep this a 1-0 game. I mean, we were in complete dominating control. Did you see the same thing, you know, that I saw? Because it looked like, if not for some luck, Bremen wasn't going to score that day.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think like some of Silas's runs were a real testament to that. Like those handful of times where it was like he had 40 yards that he could move with the ball and get a shot off or, you know, get a dangerous pass off, like definitely bossed the game.
Yeah. And it was funny because the chances galore, we had so many opportunities to put this game away and we weren't unable to do it. That was the only thing that kept me and everybody when we were at the watch party on edge. We're like, we should be way more up than 1-0 at halftime. This is a classic game. And even Seiru was missing chances that a month ago, he's curling those in or he's chipping those in. So I did get a little anxiety at points where I'm like, come on, let's finish this.
It was almost 4xG by the end of the match for us.
Yeah, it was nuts. And so it was a little bit anxious, but let's talk about the guys who kind of made that XG so high. So we got the next talking point I kind of have is the double duo here, which is Seiru and Dennis, which we all wanted. And even Dennis said, he's like, we were almost too cute. He said, quote, we could have shot a lot more than one or two more goals would have been scored. We have to work on this, end quote, is what he said. Kicker said Stuttgart played a very good first half and only had to be criticized for missing more goals. We're used to seeing Silas miss opportunities. We're not used to seeing Seiru. He had a great chance in the 40th minute, the 51st minute. But let's talk about the double duo. We talked about it for a second. It looked like exactly what Dennis said, is they were trying to figure each other out a little bit. And they had a couple plays where like, oh my God, this is gorgeous. They just weren't able to put it away. But on the flip side, so I do want to throw kind of a counter to you. Once Dennis went out and we went more to a 4-2-3-1, which is what we've been playing, it did look like Sabre was pretty comfortable with that too.
Yeah, it's one of those things that makes you think. If I'm honest, that's such a difficult position to be in terms of figuring out the lineup. And I think it's maybe one of those things that looks different every match depending upon the opponent. And it's kind of like, I think the Germans would call it a Luxus problem, a luxury problem. Like we are like, yeah, I mean, that's the best way to put it, is it's a luxury problem to have, is like, we've got three potential good striking or attacking lineups. We know if Dennis is in there alone, he can score goals. If Seyru's in there alone, he can score goals. If they're in there together,
right.
Apparently, you know, they can each get a goal and share the spoils.
That's the only thing I think is going to be interesting to see what they're able to do, if they're able to play the other more over the next few matches, is what kind of comfort zone can they get into? Because it was a lot of fun to watch, but it definitely seemed like there was a little hesitancy as they were trying to figure each other out. And I do think the announcers were right, is Seyru's working his way back into shape and back into form after the injury. So I think there is something, you know, to be said there. And this gets into the third of the four talking points I thought of, was depth. Is that not only do we have two of the best strikers in Germany right now on the same team, but we also were able to replace Ito with Mittelstadt, and we were able to kind of rotate the center backs around, and all of a sudden Stenzel came out of the mothballs. This guy hasn't played in probably a month, and not only did he played 90 minutes in this one, and he was a key part of that right side because everything was coming down the right side. It was crazy how we were singing Chris's praises. He was basically invisible on the left side this match, and I don't know if it's because Bremen was focused on him and not so much on Stenzel and Silas, but it was all Stenzel, all Silas, all day long. So I kind of want to give a little shout out to him for coming out of really nowhere and putting in a really strong performance. He had a really nice shot on goal too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was going to say the same thing. I mean, he had one of the most dangerous chances of the match. And it's one of those where I think like, all of us, when we saw him starting to wind up, we're like, no, don't do it, man. Don't do it. Come on. But by all rights, like that very well could have been a goal if it just takes a slightly harder bounce and the keeper can't cover it from distance.
Yeah, it was awesome to see him back in and him playing, you know, so well. And then the fourth and final point I had was the word deception. So it was funny because one of the big talking points, at least on the Bremen side, was the complaint about our cabbage kit. So as it turned out, at some point in the match, you know, Führer got hurt. He was on the sidelines and the Bremen goalie was kicking the ball out. And as he kicked the ball towards the sidelines, Chris was let back in after the injury. Now the goalie claimed he didn't see Chris because of the kit, because not only is it black, but everybody behind him and Stuttgart was wearing the black warm-up kits, which are pretty sweet, by the way. So the question that they had was this fair? And what referee said is, well, it's not my fault. You kicked it to nowhere, you know? And if you look at the replays, it looked like he was just kicking it to nowhere there. But then we had the Seyru penalty kick. It seemed like a kind of a light penalty. And then he did the Panenka, which is just such a ballsy move there. So I'm throwing a lot of deception at you. I'm throwing the kit at you. I'm throwing the Chris Führich, ninja move at you, the penalty at you, and his actual penalty kick at you. Which of those kind of strikes you the most?
I'll take on the kits, because when they showed him in the team store, I think the price was eye-watering, and that maybe turned a lot of people off. Obviously, the NFT thing confused a lot of us, and then also pissed a lot of us off as well. But I was not crazy about them seeing them in the team store, but I gotta say, I liked seeing the team in them. They looked pretty decent. I liked the shorts with the gold numbers and the gold logo. I thought that looked pretty cool. And I really like the keeper kit. That purple is pretty sharp. If I was to get any, I'd go Alex's purple keeper kit.
I thought that was the sharpest of all. even the people that were at our watch party, you don't know a football from a soccer ball. They're like, those are sharp. If they were in all gold. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of what we all thought. It's,
yes.
All gold.
Yes.
Then I explained, yeah, they were 183 euro a piece. And they're like, whoa, is that what a normal soccer kit costs? I'm like, well, not really, not really. But they look sharp on the players. And the one thing that's interesting about this club is outside of the, I think it was the kit last year, the diversity kit, most of the time when they wear their special kit, it ends up in a W. So that maybe they need to make 17 or 34 of these things and throw them out there.
Yes. Plus now we've stumbled upon the concept of camouflage cabbage. Yeah. Who knew
that we could just
anything throw opponents off with this?
Yeah. What did you think of the penalty when you saw it? I was a little surprised they called it.
Yes. A bit soft. Yeah, I would agree. I didn't think that in the moment, but then seeing the replays afterwards. Yeah. One of those where it's like, okay, kind of soft, but I could see it being the call on the field that they're going to give it.
The Panenka I thought was wild because that is such, I mean, I'm sure the percentage of penalty kicks that you're going to make are, it's got to be somewhere on 85, 90% of those go in. So it's just a complete guessing game, but to be able to see him, the reason why I was so happy that he got the penalty kick and he was able to put the penalty kick away is the one thing that Andres, who was at the watch party, and I were talking about is we were just being a striker, so much of it is confidence, right? And he was missing opportunities all match long. And so you're like, okay, is this going to start to dwell on him a little bit? So the fact he was able to get the penalty kick and the fact he was able to convert that kick, okay, yeah, he's not making balls go in from play, but he's putting the ball in the back of the net when given the opportunity. And so that's where Andres and I were on the same page. We're like, this was actually more important than just the 2-0. I think it was just important for him to keep that mojo going, keep that confidence going that, yeah, he can put the ball in the back of the net.
100%. And I'm interested to know from you, like, when we got that penalty, my feeling was, there's only one person on this team that I want to take this penalty, and he's missed shots galore so far. But I want Seiru stepping up to the spot to take that. Did you feel that way too?
100%. I would have been shocked if anybody else would have even taken that. I think that was one of the things that's so great about having him back on the pitch is that there's a designated guy and he's the guy, and there's an alpha in the offensive third. And that, there's no questions. And I think when he was gone, there were questions. And with him back on there, that's the questions answered. He's the guy who's going to take those shots. And he's the guy who, you know, knock on wood up to this point, has put all those away. So yeah, 100%. I would have been shocked to see anybody else but him do it. But at the end of the day, it was a 2-0 result for the good guys. Well, let's let Kicker wrap this up. Quote, Valpi wins against hopeless Bremen. Stuttgart picked up a well-deserved 2-0 win against Bremen on Saturday evening. Stuttgart was able to rely on its attacking duo. Meanwhile, Bremen's appearance raises one or two questions. I mean, the rest of the table, we were third going in. We're third right now. Bayern didn't play because of the snowstorm. Leverkusen had a draw versus Dortmund. Leipzig won versus Heidenheim. Those teams with us are your top five. I mean, we'll talk about this later during questions about where are we going to finish. But one of the things Volgemut said is that we just want to have a carefree season. And to do that, we have to get to 40 points as fast as we can. I get that he's saying the right things, which for him 6 months ago was kind of hard for him to do. But come on, you got to be feeling carefree at this point with 30 points. Cause I know I am.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. This is not just a tally for safety anymore. Like it's got to mean something more at this point that we're shooting for. And I would think in the locker room, they're talking about different goals than what Volgemut is talking about.
I think that's the biggest thing that we'll get into in our next part, headlines and questions. All right, so here we go, news and headlines. So one of the big news headlines that broke out was that after Stuttgart signed all the bread blows to contract extensions. Bayer Munich, they responded by signing their two goalies, Neuer and Ulrich, to extensions through 2025. So this is where this impacts Alex Neubel. Now, Kai Guy sent in, quote, Neuer and Ulrich are extending their contracts at Munich, so a return for Neubel to Munich is probably out of the question. But another loan for Neubel is only possible if he extends his stay in Munich, because he only has 1 year left on his contract and can no longer be loaned out. So we would have to buy him. And if we buy him, he's estimated to be for about 2 more years, around 10 to 12 million for that purchase, which wouldn't be bad, but aren't we ruining Simon's future at Stuttgart? A 1 year loan for Simon to get match practice might be possible since Bredlow has extended his contract. Difficult decisions. What do you think? So, Ted, let's talk goalie talk here. I mean, we always beat the drum about let's play the kids. That's part of our DNA. But we also have a guy in Alex Neubel who's playing lights out right now and doesn't look like he's got a future in Bayern, but he's also expensive. And that's tough for a club like Stuttgart. So
when is the last time any of us saw a starting keeper at a major club who was a teenager? Like Dennis is what, 18, maybe 19 now?
Just turned 18, like a week.
Yeah. So I think it would be the best move possible for the club to keep Alex around for another year or two. 10, 12 million is a lot for our club to spend on a keeper. I think it kind of comes down to what his wages look like. But I don't think it's the worst thing for Dennis by any means. I suspect if Dennis was as close as we want him to be, if he was going to be our number one for next season, we would have seen him already this season, I would think. Like, we would have seen him at least in the cup match against Balingen, you know, early in the season. And the fact that we haven't yet, I wouldn't say it necessarily gives me pause, but it doesn't make me think that he is going to be our number one next year, or it hasn't passed that.
Yeah, it's weird because when we signed Alex, the idea was this is a 1 year stopgap. You know, it's perfect for both clubs, right? We need a goalie who's legit, and he needs to prove himself to the Bundesliga because he had a little bit of a rough patch at Monaco before where he came from. And then I guess his exit from Schalke was really bad from the little bit I followed on Twitter. So it seemed like it was perfect for everybody. The thing that I really like about Alex Neubel, which would make me pause to give him up, is even though he hasn't done a lot in the save department the last few games, just because the defense has been so lights out in front of him, is his initiating of the offense, I think, is so underrated. If you watch, like, one of the things that Honus tries to do is to get the defense to kind of absorb into our end. And then Alex distributes out to Anton or to Daxo, and those guys push it forward, and all of a sudden we've got a numerical advantage there. And Alex, his passing is so good. And I think in this modern day, at least the way Honus is playing, that's something that's so underlooked. I just think he's such an important key, not just in the defense, but also in our offense. I think it's like you said, I think it's more the wages than the actual transfer fee, because I think he's only got the 1 year left. It doesn't look like he's got a future at Bayern. I think this could work for both clubs. And like you said, give Simon a year, 2 year loan. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
All right. So the next news was Verrill was on Valpi STR. So the podcast that Ricky Palm and Sebastian run. And this is kind of interesting. Verrill's been out of the news most of the season, which I think most people would say is probably a good thing for the poor guy. What he basically said is the club needs to be careful of growth and make sure it is a kind of slow growth and as opposed to a hasty one. And then he's trying to act in the medium term. What he talked about, and I guess according to what I've read, where he was very strong was on the economic aspects, which I think we've all said before, is that that seems to be his jam, where he's really good. So whether it's Porsche or the stadium renovation. But here's the thing. We're in third place right now. And the gap between us and between Bremen was so significant that this medium term thing is starting to get a little fuzzy. So he's in a tough spot because I think the club may think one thing, but their expectations might be getting changed because nobody expected us to be in third place at this point and possibly finishing in the top five or seven. He disagreed on the criticism of having Lam and Kadira as part of the advising group, but he did admit that he would have presented them differently knowing now what he knew then. So it's been a while since we've talked about Alexander Verrill. That's like Matt says, when you don't talk about the defense, it's probably a good thing. It's probably good we haven't talked about him too much. Any thoughts on what he said? Any thoughts on what his views are? And any thoughts on how he's going to have to change those views if this season keeps going the way it's going?
Credit where it's due. I think he has, good for him for stepping back into the shadows a little bit. Based on his performances on Double Pass on that show and how he just got like absolutely dragged on there and fairly so, I would argue, like, I don't know that he's maybe self-aware enough to have like on his own terms stepped back into the shadows, but I think it's for the best that he did. But credit due that like he's quietly done, I think, quite a good job for the club. And yeah, so I think that's great. And it's also nice to hear that he is coming to terms with being able to admit that he can be wrong sometimes, part way anyway, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's I agree with what Matt says. It's usually good when we don't hear, you know, from this stuff. But this will get into some of the questions later about how those expectations are changing and how the club's going to have to deal with some of that stuff. So let's get to some of those questions now. Mick KS writes in, Valdi for the national team. How many 10 Stuttgart players can play for the national team? I mean, at this point right now, we're thinking Valdi, Anton. We're thinking Angelo Stiller. Some people said, hey, you know, give him a run, even though there's a lot of midfielders on that team. So Dennis Undav is actively trying to get on that team. Joshua Bagnemann played there. Chris Furich is there. I mentioned like four or five guys. When all is said and done, what do you think?
We're talking for the 24 Euros?
Yeah, the word is that if Undav keeps playing the way he's playing, that Nagelsmann has actually reached out to him and that he's going to get invited to some of the friendlies in March. So he's on the radar officially. He just has to keep doing what he's doing. I think 2.5 is probably pretty high. I'd probably take the under. The problem is they can't score. And Dennis Undav doesn't fit your classic striker mold. So I think that hurts him a little bit. But if he keeps putting goals in the back, I think he's one of the top German strikers in the world right now, based on goals. It's going to be hard to keep him off the team.
Yeah. And when is the last time Germany had a classic striker in, or a striker in the classic mold anyway? I think Undav is closer than most. If we're talking for the Euros, I go under on that too, under 2.5. I think that a handful of guys get call-ups for friendly matches in the lead up to it though, because I think Valdi deserves a shot. I think he has potential to bump some of the center backs out of there for sure with the way he's been playing. Plus, just from a leadership perspective, that guy's amazing.
Yeah, I think Stiller is on the short list. I think there's just too many midfielders. I think Dennis is going to be an interesting one because if he keeps scoring, it's going to be hard to keep him off there. I mean, Nagelsmann's already tried to throw Fulkrug out there who's had success. I think Deutsch from Bremen has been on there. I think he's just throwing stuff at the wall right now, trying to get this team to do something there. One of the guys that was throwing everything against the wall on Saturday was Silas. So David asks, I thought Silas had a great match in the sense that he brought chaos to the Bremen defense. He was constantly making runs into the box and putting the green guys on their heels. Although he looks a little like Stewart, look what I can do in his finishing. I've got a feeling that it will come sooner or later. Also, my prediction for my third pod appearance has come true. 3 points that week and the week after that and the week after that. So, David, we love it. Keep it coming. We'll have to have you come back on to see if we can get 9 more points. But his point about Silas, he was having chances galore, and it was this catch-22 to where he couldn't finish any of them. But he was causing so many problems on that right-hand side. Is this the Silas of reality at this point? I mean, I think this is just who this guy is. He's a chaotic, pacey guy who can put a lot of chances together, but he just doesn't have what Seyru or Dennis have.
I agree. I think that's who he is. He is a fully formed adult now. He is not going to change. But I think he serves a purpose. And I think it was problematic in seasons past when we were counting on him to score goals because we didn't have anyone else to net goals. But I think he plays a great role in a team where we can get those goals elsewhere. He's going to create enough chaos and you know, cause enough problems for the opponent that that's going to create chances inevitably for Seyroux and Dennis and Chris and other people who can put it away.
I think that's actually such an excellent point, because last time that Silas was the Silas that we all loved was when you had that team that was just so strong in that one year where you had Sasha, you had Sosa, you had Silas, you had those three guys, and he was able to play off that. And I think maybe that your point is excellent, is that we're seeing that a little bit now to where he is a bit of a flawed player, but if he's not the key guy, but he's the third or fourth guy, he's a really good flawed player. And I think that's what David was saying. And I agree. That's what we saw at the watch party we had in Cleveland. Everybody there was paying attention to number 14, not number 9 and not Dennis Undop, but 14. Cause he was the guy that caught all their attention. And when the penalty kick went in, they're like, oh, 14 is going to take it, right? I was like, well, no, not so much. But yeah, I think what David's saying is right. He caused a lot of mischief on that side. Like you said, he caused a lot of chaos on that side. I do think this is who he is. And because he's not the guy that has to carry the team, we can put up with this because he's going to put the other teams under a lot of pressure and put Chris, Dennis, Seyroux in some pretty good positions.
Put him in a camouflage cabbage kit every match. That is our recipe for success with Silas.
Yeah, suck it, Bremen. You'll never know when we're coming unless you know cabbage is coming. In that case, you'll know exactly where we're at all times. Our next question comes from I am Rob Holloway. He of the winner of the tip spiel says, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but we almost have more points now than we did last season, and we haven't even reached the winter break, just 3 points shy of the total from last year. I'm a little concerned, though, about losing both Silas and Seyroux while they're away at the Africa Cup of Nations in January and possibly February. We have the Dortmund Pokal, the Leverkusen match, and Bayern, then Augsburg right before the break. But I feel pretty good about it. I think we'll get at least 5 points from those next three Bundesliga matches. So what do you think, Ted? Is 5 points out of those three Bundesliga matches fair to you or foul to you?
I think it would be a great return. Given the opponents, I would be very happy with 5 points out of that. Realistic, unrealistic, that's tougher to say. I would be very happy with 5, though.
I would be ecstatic with 5. That would mean we got 3 from one of those 3 matches, right? So that means we beat Augsburg, for example, and then we got 2 draws against those guys. I would be okay with that. Leverkusen only wins or draws, so that maybe is their thing. We've always been able to get a result against Bayern in the weirdest moment, so that's a possibility there. Augsburg always scares me. They won today, so you never know what you're going to get out of those guys. So 5 points, I'd be ecstatic with. I would be comfortable with 3 or 4, to be quite honest. I mean, we'll get into this in our predictions, but we're getting into the part of the schedule where we're going to actually see where our eye level competition is. And I think that's what's so exciting about this Bremen game, is that as Andres and I were talking about, is we are going into this with nothing but confidence. And no matter what happens, we got 30 points right now. I mean, we're so good. I know there's a couple of people on Twitter who follow us who they change their Twitter handle every time Stuttgart gets a point or two, and they didn't have to change their Twitter handle much last year. So this is great this year.
Yes, it's a great position to be in. 30 points after 13 matches. Yeah, absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, but Rob, I would probably take the under 5 if you, because it's 9 points possible. I would probably take under, but boy, yeah, Rob, I love your confidence there. But this gets to a question that Spencer asks. We now have 30 points with 21 matches left. Playing a relegation pace of 1 point per match would put us at 51 points. You know, they mentioned this on the broadcast, that any team that has had this amount of points at this part of the season has always finished in some kind of postseason position. He asks, how do you guys feel about the Europa Conference League, which means we would finish somewhere between 7 and possibly, depending on the Pokal, 8th. because there's this weird formula this year where the Bundesliga might get more teams. So Spencer's asking a really great question. You may be able to finish eighth this year and still get into Europa. So let me ask you this. It's Champions League. That's where the most money is at, but that's where the Union Berlins are just drowning right now. But you've got the Europa Conference League, which is definitely the weaker of the three, where teams like Freiburg are winning their table in that group. What do you think? And what are your general thoughts? When I say Champions League, Europa League, Europa Conference League, and I say Stuttgart. Where's Ted's head at on this?
Oh, man. Swimming in the deep end if we're talking Champions League. But that said, without a doubt, that's where I would want to be. I would say Europa League, close, very close second. From a realistic perspective, quality of competition, I'd still be excited to watch those matches. And I would be really excited and impressed if we were able to go far in that tournament, get out of the groups. Europa Conference League, honestly, does not do a thing for me, personally.
I think from a club perspective, if they finish in the top four or possibly five, this year's kind of weird, but definitely the top four, which is definitely a long shot still, and they had that Champions League money, I think that's something the club could survive, because I think the amount of players you could attract, the amount of money you would get to offset the players you may lose, but the difference in the gap, and we'll have to get into the details maybe next week for this, between the Champions League money and the Europa League money and the Europa Conference League money is staggering. I don't think people realize the gap between those two. And I think finishing in the Champions League can be a game changer. I think finishing in Europa Conference or Europa League can be a game changer, but in a negative way. So I would either, it's either fourth or eighth for me. I don't know, which is such a terrible thing to say, but I don't know.
Well, we've got to hope that statistic, that we're the outlier on that statistic then, I guess. And all of these statistics coming in, this one and the Undav scoring in the first and the 46th, that's like, should Derek Ray watch out? Is Joe Buck coming for his job next year?
I just love that we're whining about potentially finishing in one of the top five, seven spots. We're miserable people, Ted. We are never happy ever. At all. So
season sorry. Of Scrooge here.
Yeah. Sorry, Spencer. If it's not Spen's first place at 13th, I'm not happy. That's pretty much it right now. Damn it, Bremen, you've got our spot. So we'll see. All right. So we have some rapid fire questions from our old friend Balham. I love these. So I'm just going to throw rapid questions at you. He threw a ton at us. Just give me a real quick, short, 1-2 word response to this. All right. So number one, can Bayer Leverkusen win the title? Yes or no?
Yes.
I agree. Yes. Did you know that Stuttgart has the most goals in the first minute in Bundesliga history with 16?
I had no idea.
I don't even know what that means. It's probably not good. I don't know why that is. Oh, here's a question for you. MLS, Cincinnati versus Columbus. Oh, Ted, sorry about that.
I was at the match. It was the best atmosphere that I've had inside of that stadium, aside from maybe the USA-Mexico match that I was at there. It was incredible. The first half was absolutely awesome. The second half, obviously less so. Extra time, obviously even less so. Balhan, did you know that they call this derby Hell is Real in Ohio? There is... there's a billboard on Interstate 71 in between Columbus and Cincinnati where someone has painted, some random farmer who owns this land, presumably, the Ten Commandments on one side of his two billboards. And then on the other sides, the first one says, if you died today, where would you spend eternity? And the second one in massive letters says, hell is real. So this is the Hell is Real Derby in Balham. I felt like I was in hell on Saturday night.
You know, for our listeners who don't really follow the MLS, and I include myself in this, it's not a league match. It was the cup match. Was it like the German Pokal version? Is that what took place?
No. So Travis, and this will not surprise any of our listeners who also follow other American sports, MLS has decided to do essentially the most American thing ever, which is to say the regular season doesn't matter. It's just a pathway to a postseason playoff. Oh. So this was the conference final. This was the third round of the American Soccer playoffs. So FC Cincinnati won the Supporter Shield. They had the most accumulated points of all of the teams after regular season play. And then that got them the number one seed in the playoffs. So that most American thing of all, playoffs.
I was trying to understand what Cincinnati was celebrating because I didn't know. So they won the regular season title, but now it's the playoffs. Yes. Okay. All right.
Yes.
All right, Baham, there you go. Travis learned something right here. Here we go. And I learned that Ted is sad, which that's too bad. All right, thoughts, this real quick. Can you even do this in one sentence? Thoughts on the handball rule as we know it right now?
Impossible to do in one sentence. Impossible to do in one podcast. I don't know what's to say here other than that 100% of people are never going to agree on the outcome of 100% of handballs. And I think that's just the reality of it. And I go to something that our friend Matt said at some point last season, I think. I really like this. I think he was talking about this in the concept of American football and said he thinks the rule should be the replay officials get to spend 30 seconds behind the monitor. And if in 30 seconds they can't find incontrovertible proof that the play should be overturned, then it should stand. And I think I'm inclined to agree with that.
I think you've got a better chance of fine-tuning the offsides rule than you do the handball rule. I was watching the Cologne match, and Timo Hubers did not touch it with his hand. His hands were behind his back, but it did look like he moved his elbow in a way to direct the ball. And I'm like, that's got to be a handball. And it was not a handball. Although, you know what? I didn't think Seru's penalty was a penalty. It was. So what do I know? So Baham, we have no idea what's going on here. World Cup during the season, yay or nay? So last World Cup, it was during the season. There had to be a break. I'm going to take nay on this. I hate it. It should be during the summer. I'm sorry that it's in these countries that have 17,000 degrees, but what about you?
I loathe it. Yes. I'm also team nay. Bad for fans, bad for players, bad for clubs.
Do you like snow in football matches? This question is asked because the Bayern match was canceled this weekend because of too much snow. And there was multiple games in the Bundesliga where there was a lot of snow falling on the pitch. What do you think? You like it?
I like snow in American football. I don't know that I like snow in European football, other than the odd game here or there. Once a season, great. I think it spices it up.
The last NFL football game I went to actually was the Snow Bowl match between the Buffalo Bills and the Cleveland Browns in 2007. It ended 8-6 for the good guys, Cleveland in this one. It was so cold, you would buy a beer, and by the time you got to your seat, it had frozen over. I have never been to a game since. And the fun thing is we called that season the season of dreams. We didn't even make the playoffs, but we had like a winning record. So in Cleveland, it's still legendary. So no, in American football, I love it. It is kind of funny sometimes to watch them try to break out the orange ball in soccer and roll that out there. But nah, not a big fan. Clearly, he's never been here, Ted. Does it snow in Ohio? I'm just going to laugh at that one.
Yeah, come here sometime, Balham. Yeah, in addition to Travis's game, Cincinnati was home to the Freezer Bowl in 1981, where it was -9 degrees Fahrenheit was the air temperature and -59 was the wind chill. So I did the math. It's 23 degrees below zero Celsius was just the regular old temperature. And then there was wind chill on top of that.
And those are back.
We get cold, we get snow.
That was back in the days too, when Cincinnati had the stadium where it was basically on concrete too. I can't imagine playing on that. And that was right around the time in 1980, Cleveland had the miracle season, still didn't go outside of one playoff game, where they had a kicker who, because it was so cold, he had broken his foot, and they kept rolling him out there to kick. And so they had to go for on Red Right 88. And if you look up Red Right 88, it's right up there with the fumble and the drive and all those other things. But part of the reason is because their kicker had broken his foot and they kept trotting this poor dude out there. And he's like, it's too cold. I can't kick anymore. So there you go. One of the questions he asked too is the public transportation system in Germany for games is amazing. So Ted, maybe you experienced this when you went there, is that when you buy the ticket to the match, that also gets you a ticket to the public transportation. And part of the reason I thought about this is Godzi, who is on Twitter and he runs the Reddit account, does a great job. Took him like 3 hours to get back home from the Stuttgart match because of all the snow and all the weather out there. But my question to you is not so much about the German public transportation system, but do you take public transportation in your neck of the woods?
Occasionally. So we do have, Cincinnati has a streetcar. Germans would laugh at it. It is comically inefficient for a city of our size. Bus system, not great. Sebastian of STRX VF Bay, if he listens to our pod, he will appreciate this. I biked to the game last night, there and back. Granted, it was about 5 kilometers, so not really impressive in terms of what he does for some of our away matches. Cycling in Cincinnati is okay.
You and Christian Strike, he's famous for biking to the matches at Freiburg, so you two might get along, you know, pretty well there. The last question that is asked is a great one, is are you buying any VFB gear for the family for Christmas? I'm famous for buying stuff. I've actually toned it down this year because multiple reasons. Luckily, every time I hop on the website, everything is sold out. I wanted the Advent box so bad because I had gotten it 2 years in a row, but I restrained. And by the time I was going to pull the trigger, it had been sold out there. What about you? Any gear for the family for Christmas?
Your Advent boxes, the calendars have worked out so well in past years. They always show up in pristine condition. Oh, it's a true testament to the quality of DHL's work. So it's a real shame that you couldn't get one of those. I did get Christmas gear. So friends of the pod, my wife and I have a daughter on the way, who will be born in May. So I spent time during the match on Saturday, getting gear for my new kiddo. So I've got stuff for her for, everything up from birth to age 2. She will be decked out in Fritzla gear and all sorts of great VFB stuff.
Yes. Well, number one, congratulations. Number two, we should start our Patreon account where we give parenting advice on how to raise Fritzl supporters from a young age there. So yeah, that's awesome. So if you have any Fritzl gear, send it to Cincinnati because Doug's got a kiddo coming on the way. So that's awesome. And finally, Baham asks, how are you feeling about the Dortmund match coming up? And would you let Bayer Leverkusen win if it meant a new Bundesliga champion? Which this is a fantastic segue to part 4, predictions. All right, Ted. So here we go. This is it. Last part of the podcast. We've got the Pokal match on Wednesday. Now, it's against Dortmund. We beat them about 2-1 about a month ago. We dominated that match, but the result was closer than really what we saw on the pitch. Bayer Leverkusen and Dortmund played, and it was a draw. Leverkusen was able to come back in that match. Bayer, when it comes to them, we play them on the weekend. We only were 1-5-17 in our last 23 against them. Last year, we had a 1-1 draw with Seiru in May to help save our season. When Wimmer was our coach, we lost 2-1 in a match that wasn't even that close, really. So we'll be home twice in a row, though. We've got Dortmund at home for the Pokal on Wednesday, which is going to be on ESPN Plus around 2:30 in Eastern Standard Time. And then we play on the weekend against Bayer Leverkusen. The next weekend, we've got Bayer München. What are you thinking? There's a lot coming up in the short period of time against two traditional powerhouses. Where's your mind at when you think, okay, Dortmund on Wednesday and then the table leaders this weekend?
I like us in the Pokal. I really do. I think Gregor Kobel was the only thing that kept Dortmund in that match. Granted, I think part of that was that they had played a Champions League match midweek before they played us, but I like us at home in that one. I think it'll feel a lot closer than the last one did, I suspect, but I like us by a goal maybe in that one. Leverkusen, especially coming off of a midweek match, I'm much less confident about, but I wouldn't be surprised at the same time to see us get a draw, maybe even a win. But that one's going to be a tougher match in my eyes.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Is I could see us getting the result against Dortmund. Bayer Leverkusen is going to be a tough one. But here's where I want to ask the next question, because I agree with you 100% with what you just said, is how excited are you, though, for the next three matches? And how of a juxtaposition is this from the previous couple years? Because there are games where you play the schedule game, you're like, all right, we've got Heidenheim, Darmstadt, Mainz. Okay, we got a chance to get 6-9 points in this one. Okay, we've got Leverkusen, Dortmund, Munchen. All right, that's over. Let's just roll the U21 team out there so nobody gets hurt. I am so excited for these next 2 weeks. I usually try to set up watch parties around the Bremens and the Heidenheims because I think we have a chance. I'm really jealous because Doug in Youngstown is going to have a watch party where he's trying to get some of the Bayern Munchen supporters together. I think this is just going to be awesome to see where we're at. And if we get our heads bashed in 4-0, 5-0, okay, we know where we're at. If we hang with these guys, okay, Verrill, Volgemut, it's time to worry about where we're at a little bit. So I don't know about you, but I think for the first time in 5, 6, 7 years, this is an exciting time to play the teams that are traditionally way above us.
100% agree. Yeah. I think there's no doubt. Downside for us. So really excited for these matches. And I think like in Honus, we trust. Like I think that guy, I'd put him out there as a coach against anyone. Xabi Alonso is fantastic. Don't get me wrong. But I think he could absolutely hold his own with Thomas Tuchel against Bayern. So I'm excited about this more so than I am nervous by any means.
It's interesting you brought that up because the match that we had against Frankfurt 2 weeks ago, the announcers kept talking about the chess match that was taking place between the Frankfurt head coach and Honus and how the game was almost boring because they kept countering each other all the time. And it was so fun to watch that in replay, you know, obviously because we got the win, but to see how he's able to make moves in time. And we all love Pellegrino, and Pellegrino is a very intellectual, smart guy. But this Honus guy, I don't know, has stepped it up to another level to where he's able to make the moves, it seems like, in the right time, and he's able to counter. So I would imagine there's going to be an interesting back and forth in the match on Wednesday because we got the better of them in the league against Dortmund. And I think it's going to be an even more interesting match on this weekend because we've got nothing to lose. And those guys are coming off a draw. And we got two home games in a row. Two. That's a little bit bizarre there. So two home games in a row. What do you think? Are we the favorites?
Against Dortmund, I'm guessing maybe we get the half goal kind of home team courtesy spread. Against Leverkusen, a pick'em is my guess.
You're pretty close. It's a pick'em on Wednesday against Dortmund, which I was a little surprised about, to be quite honest. We are the underdogs at home against Leverkusen this weekend by half a goal. So I'm a little surprised by that. I agree with you. I think we can get a result against Dortmund. I think it'll be – I'm going to go 3-1. We're just playing with so much confidence. The Leverkusen match, 3-2, where they'll get the win in that one. So I'm picking us to split this week. What about you?
It's tough because it'll be interesting to see how Honus – what he does with the lineups with three matches in 7 days to see, which competition does he prioritize? I'm assuming this early in the season and with the league match being against Leverkusen that he prioritizes the cup, I guess, given that we're kind of in a deep run again. So that's part of why I feel more confident about that one. I don't know about 3-1. I would love it. That would be amazing. I'm thinking maybe more 2-1, something like that. their goal in that, the Fukuru goal was like out of nothing. Like that was the first chance they had in that match. He bagged that one, but that was just such dominance from us. But I'd be hard pressed to say we're going to get three past Coble. Leverkusen, man, I'd gladly take a draw in that one, honestly. Yeah. I could see a 1-1 in that. But I'm tempted to go David level optimism here and guarantee 3 points. What do I have to lose? Although he hasn't been invited back on the pod. So,
well, no, we want to keep his streak alive. So we will wait. We'll wait for you to blow it and then we'll invite him back on. How's that?
You heard it here first.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's crazy because you don't know. This team is playing so well with so much mojo. And I think that's the big thing is over the last two matches, they actually haven't played great when it comes to finishing, but they still had two pretty dominant results and they played like big clubs. And so now we are playing big clubs and it'll be interesting to see what happens. It's hard for me to pick against the white and red when they're playing at home. That place is just a fortress, it seems like. So I like our chances. I just think this is such a great time to be a Stuttgart supporter because everything's so fun. The results are fun. The kits are fun. Cabbage is fun. Dan Axo is leapfrogging over players. That's fun. I mean, the whole thing is just fun. So that's why I'm having such a great time just celebrating. We've got the OFC going. We've got these watch parties going. The team's getting results. You're probably going to name your kiddo Fritzel. It's just everything is going great at this point.
What a time to be alive and be a VfB fan.
All right, folks. I think that's where we're going to wrap it up tonight. If you have any questions or any pairing advice you want to send, you can reach him at Teddy VfB. Ted, thanks so much for popping on again. 2 weeks in a row, episode number 10 for you. And hopefully, like David, you can guarantee a couple, three results in a row and we'll never have you on. Ever again.
I'm happy to be here. Episodes 9 and 10 were fantastic. Thanks for listening, everybody. And thanks for having me on, Travis.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks a lot.